Welcome to a very special President's Cup edition of the Four Press Podcast presented by GolfWeek.com. I'm your host, David Dusek, and joining me from Royal Melbourne Golf Club in Australia is Adam Shupak, who's been reporting all week for GolfWeek.com. The United States team has made a comeback and was able to win the 2019 President's Cup 16-14 against the international team. And in the podcast you're about to hear, Adam and I talk at length about the job done by captains Ernie Els and Tiger Woods. We also talk about the performance of some of the great players like Justin Thomas and Abraham Anser. And we also talk about the crowd at Royal Melbourne that greeted Patrick Reed with jeers and songs and more than a few expletives, and how Reed and his caddy handled that, and how things went on Sunday for the American team. Lots to talk about in this very special edition of the Four Press. Get stronger, hit longer, and end pain with Golf Forever. Created by Justin Leonard and co-author of the Younger Next Year Back book, Dr. Jeremy James, Golf Forever is the Take Anywhere online golf fitness program that helps you build a body primed for golf. It's simple, safe, and it works. At home, in the gym, on the golf course, Golf Forever's easy-to-follow exercises, warm-up routines, and course management videos will help you play your best pain-free. Sign up today at golfforever.com and use promo code GOLFWEEK for a free 14-day trial. So joining the podcast now is Adam Shupak, who is still in Melbourne, Australia, where the Americans have won the 2019 President's Cup. And Adam, you and I had a chance to chat a little bit before the final singles matches began. And around 8:10 Eastern time on Saturday night, which was Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon for you guys, Tiger Woods drains a putt on the 10th hole to go two up on Abraham Anser. And it made me start thinking about what we were chatting about, which is the depth of the U.S. team and how many really top players I thought and you thought were in singles. That was going to end up being the difference. And it was. The Americans won the singles session 8-4. But things got a lot closer down the stretch than either of us thought they would. I think that we got the outcome we were all anticipating, but maybe not how we got there. When you think back on the 2019 President's Cup, what are going to be the things, the takeaways that first and foremost stand out in your mind?
Well, I think this event, the new life was breathed into it with this very competitive, exciting, close, and just this is what we want to see in this type of competition. Yep. Love match play, love everything really about this concept of starting it on Thursday versus Friday, the way the Ryder Cup does. I love how the captains pick teams against, you know, go back and forth. I love that. I think Ernie Els did a great job as captain in bringing this team, giving this team some unity, which it had always struggled with the different cultures involved.
Agreed.
I think that's one of my big takeaways. But I think probably my biggest of all is that this was a really squandered opportunity. This was the year for the international team to finally break through and get a victory and end this. Like, it's really one of the longest losing streaks in sports right now. And I think it's going to be that way for, they only play every 2 years, but I think, you know, Quail Hollow in 2021, I'm going to go ahead and say the Americans are going to probably have an even better team.
Well,
than they did
yeah.
This year. And so,
I mean, if you look at the core, and I want to get into that in just a couple of minutes, the core of the American group and the core of the internationals. The internationals had a lot of rookies out there, but I think that there were some really critical players that I agree. This may have been their last best chance. You know, how many more years are going to have Adam Scott be able to play like Adam Scott? Some of the other players have been somewhat up and down. Louis Oosthuizen, who's been a real stalwart for this team, we've already seen some of the guys that we would have thought of as the core group, they're already being phased out, and they're being replaced by some fantastic players. But yeah, I would agree. How much better of an opportunity? They're at a golf course that's very un-American. After the U.S. team gets in a plane, flies, you know, as it's been well noted, 26 hours from the Bahamas down to Melbourne. So they've got the jet lag effect on a golf course that Ernie Els and Jeff Ogilvy, Cameron Smith, you know, all these guys know really, really well. Obviously, Adam Scott, they know it really well. How much more can they have going in their favor? They got the big lead early, and to your point, they squander it. And the U.S. depth, I think, sort of comes through again. So I agree. I think it's going to be a real problem for them.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head. And you know, no Brooks Koepka this time.
Yeah, the number one player in the world.
DJ was, had a long layoff and surgery, and same with kind of Ricky, and really was kind of rusty. And it did take them a few days to figure out how to play that golf course, which, that they're not going to have that issue at Quail Hollow, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And, there's some young studs coming along. I mean, I don't know why Tiger Woods could have easily have taken Colin Morikawa or Matt Wolf. I think those guys are going to be more seasoned and probably in consideration for the team. There's a good chance, who knows, Jordan Spieth could be back on top of the world by then. And so I think the American team is locked and loaded. I felt for the international team. It seemed like this was their year. They could have had a very large lead going into Saturday, potentially 9-1 or 8-2, and instead of some matches got flipped late, and 6.5 to 3.5 was still a nice lead, but didn't turn out to be enough coming down the stretch.
Els alluded to that on the fairway. He was being interviewed on Golf Channel, and they were asking him about it, and he alluded to the second session where at one point the international team was ahead in all five matches that were on the golf course, and they had the opportunity to go out there and really distance themselves, and the Americans put on a late charge and grabbed some points and took some off the board for the international teams. And we saw a repeat performance of that in Saturday's play late again. And yeah, I think that those squandered opportunities and that sort of being the takeaway for you is something that's you just can't escape that. One of the things that I thought was most interesting, though, is that after Matt Kuchar seals the win by making that putt to go up one on the 17th with Louis Oosthuizen, guaranteeing that the U.S. is going to get at least a half point, and that was going to seal it, Tiger Woods was about as emotional and seemed more full of joy than I can ever remember him seeing on a golf course. I mean, he was beaming, absolutely just, he kept referring to, like, my boys, and we earned it as a team. They didn't give it to us. We had to earn it, and we did. How would you rate Tiger's performance as captain in this President's Cup?
Kind of have mixed feelings about how he did. I really thought it was, I think his biggest error was keeping Webb Simpson and Patrick Reed together for three sessions. I was a little surprised that he paired them together the first day, and then a little more surprised that he went with them the second day. I really thought that the pairing was going to be the two Patricks, Patrick Cantlay and Patrick Reed. They never even played together. And then the third, after they lost twice, to throw them out the third time, I thought didn't make any sense. And they got really whipped that last day. Patrick Reed didn't even make a birdie. I thought that was the biggest thing that I didn't like. And then just the decision not to play at all on Saturday. He still really hasn't explained fully what he was doing there. But I guess, it all comes down to how people play, and that one, I guess, didn't really backfire since they had a pretty good session.
Well, yeah,
overall,
that to me, he got a little bit lucky with that one. I think that, and again, you're on the grounds in Australia, and I'm not, but we know that cold weather, damp weather, and such like that is going to be really difficult for Tiger Woods' back, and I have a hunch that he probably knew he was going to need to get some level of rest going five sessions. Was probably not going to be realistic for Tiger. And if he was going to sit one out, that blustery, chilly session, I mean, the image of Patrick Cantlay wearing the hat and looking absolutely miserable as he got ready to tee off was hysterical. And those were just not conditions that were going to be good for him. And the problem was that he and, at that point, Justin Thomas, were the best American team, bar none. I mean, they were out there getting points in the first session, the second session. They needed his iron game. They needed his putter, which all of that was coming through. Tiger played, and we can get to Tiger, the player, in just a second, but he was brilliant. And for him to bench himself, to me, just said, I don't know that the weather conditions and the way my back is going to be is going to be the best chance for us. I was equally surprised to see Reed going back out there with Webb Simpson. And, what was your reaction, I suppose, to the benching? How surprised were you that he didn't play at all or even come out in the afternoon session on Saturday?
I really thought that was – I didn't see that one coming. In some ways, I kind of felt the fans who, came out that
bought
day –
the tickets, yeah.
Left, Yeah, they were cheated of the opportunity to see Tiger. We're not sure how many more times he's going to come all the way back to Australia. Maybe not at all. But I thought, why are you taking your best player so far out of the competition for 2 days, for two sessions, for the full day? He and Justin Thomas looked unbeatable together, and so I didn't like that call at all. I guess it, like you said, it probably comes down to how he was feeling. The only person who really kind of made that, I thought, publicly said anything to that extent was Gary Woodland. Came in for a press conference and said that Tiger basically felt he wasn't ready to go. And otherwise, because Tiger's just, a lot of his answers were just very elusive and ambiguous and
Well, there's a new one.
evasive, I guess would be the, yeah, he was just didn't share a lot of any, and neither did Ernie, who had this whole and I don't know how much you want to talk about the
Well,
number
yeah,
crunching
that to
that
me
he
is the next
snapped at.
logical thing is that Tiger Woods, was good as a captain, and I think there's some questionable moves, and you mentioned the two, but on the flip side, Ernie Els to me said all the right things, especially at the beginning, and seemed to have pushed all the right buttons. I love the idea that he created that shield or that emblem, which they really didn't get into a whole lot of detail about the symbols that are sort of embedded within it. But he did, I think, an outstanding job of creating, really for the first time in a while, team unity and getting everybody together. I thought it was fascinating that he gave the impression that he wanted his players to play the golf course in a certain way, that he obviously understands Royal Melbourne tremendously well. And you wrote for Golf Week about how they were using 15th Club and different types of analytics to try and come up with the best combination of players, the best ways to play the golf course, etc. He really, it seemed, put his players in a position where they could succeed. It was up to them to execute shots, but obviously it didn't work out in the end. What were your feelings about the Big Easy as captain?
I think he did a as good a job as probably could be done. Maybe there's some questions about, he made second guess. You could second guess some of his batting order for the singles on Sunday, but I think overall, I think he did a really good job of getting. I think the players loved playing for him. I think that they will. I think there's a good chance he will be back as the captain in 2021. Interestingly, every President's Cup international captain, except for the original one, David Graham, has had multiple terms as the President's Cup captain. So it wouldn't be it's not an unusual thing for multiple years. And Ernie Els, with his ranking in the game and stature, certainly deserves another chance. He poured a ton of energy into this. I thought, Louis mentioning that that this process all started with the team gathering at Shinnecock in June of 2018 at the U.S. Open. That's how long they've been trying to get this team together, and I think what he did really worked. Jeff Ogilvie, when I was chatting with him, made the point that he remembered a year where the first time he ever met KT Kim was who played in Korea and Japan was on the Tuesday of the week of the matches, and he said, we were friends by Saturday, but at that point it's a little too late. These guys were bonded as a team ahead of time better, and then I do think the analytics was successful in putting some teams together that they might not have come up with in the past. Ernie saying that a lot of times Greg Norman, Nick Price, what they would do was a lot of gut. Just kind of going by feel and the old eye test of saying, these guys are from the same country and they speak the same language, so they'll be good partners. And now we're drilling down deeper into, who's hitting fairways and who's got the better short game and coming up with a much more
Yeah, for alternate
just
shot, for
detailed
example,
way.
when you get guys, it's like, okay, the thinking was let's put guys who play a similar style together was the old method. Now you look at it, it seems to me pretty obvious. Like, if we've got a really big hitter, let's put him with a really good wedge player because there's going to be a lot of wedges into these approach shots. Let's strategically think about how we're combining these people together, not just on, okay, it's a couple of guys from Japan, or it's a couple of guys who are from Argentina or wherever they happen to be. So the language barrier isn't there. They probably have an established relationship. Maybe they play the same golf ball, whatever it's going to be. It seemed like there was a lot deeper, as you're saying, thinking, a lot more thinking that went into the creation of the pairings, and they were there. I mean, it was right there. I think the captains, and this is, you know, whatever cliche you want to sort of pull up, but they all they can do is put the players in a position where they can execute shots and win matches. No, Ernie Els didn't hit any shots. It's such a unique situation that Tiger Woods, being a playing captain, obviously he did. But all Els can do is create an environment where his players are comfortable, they have a really good understanding of the golf course, and then let these, the best international players, the best team you can put together, go out there and try and succeed. And for four sessions, it was working. And there was a little while on Sunday where things got kind of dicey, and it looked like they might be able to come back and steal just enough to be able to win the cup. So I agree. I think that he did a really good job. The other interesting story sort of coming into the week, you know, before everything began, everyone wanted to see what was going to happen with Patrick Reed. And obviously the crowd gave him the business coming out of the Hero World Challenge, where he was assessed that two-stroke penalty for moving the sand behind his golf ball. You knew that was going to happen. He gives it right back to them, which we kind of assumed that was going to happen. And then his caddy ends up getting banned from Sunday's play after shoving a fan who was yelling expletives at Reed. Now, going into the singles, as we already said, like Reed had played terribly. He and Webb Simpson hadn't won a point. He wasn't making birdies. I was thinking that Reed is either going to go one of two ways. Either he's going to really implode, and it's going to be an all-time stink job in terms of Patrick Reed at the President's Cup, or he's going to come out ultra-focused. He's going to cocoon himself, and he's the kind of guy that probably loves the idea of me versus the world. He probably thinks it's me versus the world just about every day. And certainly going up 4-4 and putting lights out, getting that huge lead, was not wholly surprising. Maybe going up 4-4 is a little bit surprising. I wasn't surprised that he played well. The fact that CT Pan then wins 4 out of 6 at the turn and makes things a little bit interesting was surprising. Reed wins 4-2, but you were out there with Patrick Reed in that group. What was going on? What was the dynamics? Tell me about the security and the drunks and the people who weren't. What was it like out there?
You know, I think it was such a strange week for the guy. It's just everything with him is such a soap opera. And this was just, you knew that, like you said, you knew the fans were going to get on him. And part of it, you know, there was a bit of an inevitability to this whole saga that happened on Saturday with his caddy, because, you know, a bunch of the players, from Adam Scott to Cameron Smith and Mark Leishman, were basically said to the fans, "We want you to get on him. We want you to, you know, give this guy a hard time. He deserves it." And it almost, we're waiting for somebody to go a little bit across the line, because overall, I thought most of the stuff was pretty harmless. I mean, the guy, having people calling you a cheater and some of the other stuff that was said, but you know, the stuff calling him the excavator or Mr. Sandman, that stuff's kind of funny, and you expect that from fans. I mean, I think that's all, that stuff's kind of fair. And Patrick Reed is this stuff is his fuel. He lives off of this. He's got a tough skin, but his caddy apparently a bit of a snowflake. And that's kind of what Ernie Els was saying in the press conference, was, you know, we went through a lot worse in New York at Liberty National in 2017.
I was at New York, and he's right. I mean, I wasn't in Australia, but I can tell you that long about 11 o'clock each morning, the folks in New York were well hydrated, and they were letting their opinions be known. We'll sort of leave it at that. But yeah, I think Els is right on that one.
Yeah, there was plenty of Heinekens being consumed out on the golf course, and pretty much every hole somebody had something to say. Some were clever, some were just, stay out of the bunker, get in the bunker type stuff. But Patrick Reed just didn't seem to have much energy the first few days. It didn't seem like Captain America out there. And then on Sunday, wow, that was the guy we were hoping for. And I just think, he's such a lone wolf. He really doesn't play that well in the foursome and four ball, unless he's been paired with Jordan Spieth, and that teaming has kind of broken up. But in singles, he's that's his mojo yeah. there.
Yeah.
And he was spectacular. It was really fun to watch him play. He was fired up. We saw the fist pumps and the come ons and let's goes and giving fans the stink eye when they were giving him a hard time. He hit some brilliant shots out there, especially the bunker shot he hit on 7. I was walking down the fairway at the next hole. He had short-sided himself on that short hole in the right greenside bunker and just hit this incredible spinny bunker shot, which is not easy in those, the sandbelt bunkering is so spectacular, and put it in tight birdie range, and just, he was 6 up after 7, and Bones, I think he said this as much on the broadcast, but he came up to me and he said, "Have you ever seen a bunker shot as good as that?" And I said, "Well, maybe a few when you were with Phil." Yeah,
exactly.
But it was, he was just a birdie machine, and, CT Pan, who had made just about everything, the couple other matches that he'd played against Patrick, just missed a few early, couple three putts. Yeah. And he put up a good fight, and it kind of got interesting. It was starting to feel a little bit like late Saturday afternoon when Justin Thomas and Ricky and a couple other matches all of a sudden, lost some big leads that ended up in being tied. I was starting to wonder if Patrick was going to let it get away, but he closed the door, and, that was a big point.
So he redeems himself to some degree with that great singles performance on Sunday, and that's great. And we'll remember that. We will remember, as we still do, obviously, his tremendous performance against Rory McIlroy at Hazeltine. He played tremendous golf, some of the best golf he's probably ever played in his life. Let's fast forward about a year and a half or so, and let's say that he is just outside of the qualifying players for the Ryder Cup. If you're captain, would you want him on your team?
Yeah, that's a tough one. It depends a little bit on who are some of the other options, I guess. But he's a big distraction. I think this was a somewhat unusual circumstance because of what happened in the Bahamas right before it. So I have to think something like that's not going to be going on. But it is a home match, so maybe he will get a little bit better of a reception from the American fans. And but the dynamic, the team dynamic, he just doesn't fit so well. So I guess it'll depend a lot on how he's playing. If he's borderline, I could see Steve Stricker saying it's not worth it.
Yeah, especially when you consider the type of player that, generally speaking, he is. I mean, he's got a different game than somebody like Dustin Johnson and Tony Finau and Brooks Koepka, these big power players. He relies on momentum. He relies on that putter and short game, which, when they're on, he's got to be just brutal to compete against in match play. But then whenever I was watching him, and he's going, losing his first couple matches with Webb, and then he loses the third one, and obviously I was, like, you've got to bench this guy. It occurred to me, if you were looking for that skill set, then what about Kevin Kisner? There's a lot of guys, that could go in to that slot that are going to be total team players. And Kisner's played some, cup events. He's been around. There's guys, for example, if you just wanted a really, grade A putter, what about a guy like Brian Harman? Could be somebody who could jump. There are alternatives, and you sort of hinted at, let's see who are the other choices that could be there. But the distraction and all the off-course stuff has got to be getting old. I think the American team is going to all say the right thing. No one's going to throw him under the bus, which we don't know if he would reciprocate that because he's thrown other people under that bus. But it has to be getting old. The idea of creating chemistry and team unity is something that I think in these events are really important. Obviously, Ernie Els thinks it's really important. That was one of the main pushes that he had through this week. And if a player like Patrick Reed is going to rock the apple cart too much and disrupt things, then he's taking away from his value. He's taking away from what he brings to the table, and it's a real problem. I don't know if you want him to sort of be anything other than what he is, but it's something that's – I think that they're going to have to really think long and hard about bringing him in there. One guy who is clearly going to be on these Cup teams for a long, long time is Justin Thomas. I mean, if you think back, Shoop, after 2015, Jordan Spieth wins 2 majors, almost wins 3. And a lot of people are thinking he's going to basically be the face of American golf. He's not even on this team, you know, with the problems that he's been going through. Brooks Koepka, the world number one, is injured. I get that, so he wasn't there. But it feels like Justin Thomas, who was 3-0-1 coming in to the singles, he lost to Cameron Smith, a match maybe he could have won, but okay, he lost that one. It feels like he is going to be the leader of this core group of American players who are going to be playing Ryder Cups and President's Cups going forward. Do you get that sense as well? And is that sort of the feeling around the American team and on the golf course as well?
I love me some Justin Thomas. Love me some Justin Thomas. No, I think he is kind of the new Captain America for the team. I think he is taking that leadership position and probably will step into it, you know, next year. It's an incredible stat. He got to 10 wins between President's Cups and Ryder Cups faster than anyone since Lanny Watkins and Sam Snead. How about that?
Nice.
I mean, that's some good company. Anytime you break your
Lanny
breaking
Watkins,
a record or time,
absolutely.
Yeah, with Sam Snead, you're doing something right. And he will be the first to admit that, you know, Tiger kind of carried him a bit in a couple of those early wins, but you know, he came up with the big putt to secure victory with Tiger. And then I just think he was definitely the leader playing with Ricky. The two of them have paired very well. I could see that being a Ryder Cup pairing if Jordan Spieth isn't on the team, because those guys seem to work very well.
Yep.
At Le Golf National. Justin Thomas he's just going to get better. I think he's our top American right now. You know, let's not forget Brooks Koepka, who didn't sat this one out. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think Justin Thomas is a really tough guy in match play. I was really impressed watching him play singles against Rory McIlroy last year, and the two of them were tied going to 18, and Rory drove into the bunker, and Thomas hit a beauty and pulled out that victory. Showed me a lot just the way he was able to do that. And also, man, I gotta say, I love the way, you know, he was just a smoldering, angry man. I didn't even try to talk to him after, he and Ricky gave up a 5-5 up lead, you know, that they had in their match on Saturday afternoon. Yeah. He was just on fire, and you know, it was I like seeing that. I mean, he
yeah,
just said
he
it was unacceptable. It was unacceptable for that to be only a half point, and that's what you want to see in your top guy.
But at the same time, there's no feeling, I don't think, ever, that he's going to cross the line. He is going to be competitive. He's going to be fiery within himself, but he's not the kind of guy who is going to get into it with the crowd or upstage his opponent or try and do any of the monkey business that we've seen with Reed. And that's one of the reasons why I think that it just organically comes out. The leadership is not something that he had to, or seems like he's trying to consciously grab. It just comes out. You look at him by example, and here is one of the most talented players in the world who has shown this means a lot to him. He really wants to win Ryder Cups and President's Cups. He wants to play at the highest level. He's played with different players sort of his generation. I get the fact that he hasn't really swapped up. But then to pair up with Tiger Woods, which to some degree had to be a surreal experience, because here's the guy that you idolized growing up, and I'm sure was a huge influence on him, you know, when he's playing junior golf and then afterwards.
Yeah.
And he's playing alongside of you, and he's carrying you a little bit the first day, but then you're the guy who sinks the winning putt. You're the guy on that putt, you know, on that putter drop thing who maybe probably created one of the highlights of the event, and you're doing it alongside your idol. And he's all of these things are put together. All these experiences, I think, have the potential to make 2020 for Justin Thomas a huge year. If he can roll this in, which is interesting because the President's Cup being so late this year, we're going to get right back into the PGA Tour season in the United States pretty quickly here. I mean, we've got the Tournament of Champions at Kapalua is going to come up in Sony, and Justin Thomas is going to be getting back into things much sooner than, for example, if the President's Cup was being played in September or the first week of October, and then you'd have, you know, a 3 or 4 month layoff before his schedule gets going. I think it's going to be easier for him to maintain this and have a really, really big year. The other player who I think has the potential to, and really the breakout player of this event for me, was Abraham Anser from Mexico. He was as tough as a $4 steak playing against Tiger Woods. He was an absolute handful. How much do you think this experience for Anser pushes him in 2020, and what does he get out of this?
Yeah, I think he's one of the most underrated players in professional golf right now. You know, he had won a tournament, the Australian Open, last year, so very comfortable in the Australian Sam Bell golf courses. But he did not get a victory last year. Finished second at one of the FedEx events. So, you know, he played well all season, but he has not won yet. His caddy said to me, people don't know much about him because he doesn't get the featured pairings. He's not playing with any of the winners yet. So I think he's a guy, I'd put money on him winning a tournament in 2020 and continuing to develop as a player. You know, he's come a long way from, you know, losing his card his very first season, really struggling, and shows that he belongs. Got a great short game and a super putter, and showed a lot of guts this week. Although the one interesting thing was that, you know, Abraham Anser had made a comment at Mayakoba Golf Classic that he wanted to face Tiger Woods. Well, apparently Tiger read that. And so it was almost like a Stephen Ames type 10-8 thing. He wanted a piece of Abraham Anser, and Abraham learned what it's like to face Tiger Woods when he's hungry to show you who's boss.
I saw the quote that came out afterwards. It's that basically was attributed to Tiger, saying like, he said that he wanted me and he got it. It's like, you know, you really want to be careful, because Tiger does, I think, read, or he has people that read everything for him. I was at TPC Boston a couple of years ago when they had the Dell Technology Championships, which is, at that point, was the second leg of the FedEx Cup, and he shot a Saturday 65 and was brilliant. And I think a lot of people were looking around like, who the hell's Abraham Anser? We haven't ever heard of this guy. You're looking in the field, and there was Rory, and there was Koepka, and Spieth was sort of trying to grind his way out of some troubles and things like that. And I saw Anser on the putting green late on Sunday morning, and he was one of the last groups that go out. Actually, it was Monday morning, because they finished that one on Labor Day Monday. And the moment already, even before he hit the first shot, seemed like it was too big for him. He had played some very good golf. He did not look ready to be that field on a big golf course like TPC Boston. But it was an incremental step, you know, and so he was out there and he got that experience. And to your point, like, he's played pretty well. This year, he's in some of the last groups when Patrick Reed wins at Liberty National, and that's more experience. And these cup competitions, I agree. I think the world of the guy. I don't think that he looks like what we think of the prototypical, you know, 2020 golfer who's going to be 6'4", totally jacked and ripped, and is hitting at 330 off the tee. But he controls the ball brilliantly. His short game is so good. He hits also some bunker shots. You talk about Reed hitting some. Abraham Anser hit a couple of long, like 75, 100-foot bunker shots from some of those tremendous Alistair McKenzie bunkers on that golf course. And he's knocking him dead. I mean, they're kicking range. And I'm just like, this guy is unbelievable. It was the kind of performance that, candidly, I was sort of hoping to see from Adam Scott, who, playing on home ground, must today feel absolutely gutted. I was shocked to see that Xander Schauffele was able to handle him the way that he did. Scott put up a fight towards the end. But I thought, playing in Australia, Scotty would be the toughest guy in singles. What do you think is going through Adam Scott's head? He has so many losing experiences now in President's Cup. It's realistic to think that he's not going to play another one as a home game probably again. He's got to be absolutely just crushed right now, right?
And he in the press conference, he just couldn't even, he could hardly put a few sentences together. And he's such an elegant speaker. He just kept saying how disappointed he was, and that, you know, he believes that the team's moving in the right direction for the future, and he wants another crack at it. That was about all we could really get him to say at that point. And, you know, I think I feel bad for Ernie in the sense that, you know, the guys who I think have gone through the most pain, none of them really delivered today. Hideki has been on a number of teams in a row, and he was four up through eight holes and ended up in a tie. Louis, his countryman, who grew up idolizing mm-hmm. Ernie, had a big lead as well and let Matt Kuchar back into that match, and Matt Kuchar clinched the winning point, half point. And then Adam Scott, I mean, yeah, the guy is winless in nine times. It was right, like we said, right there for the taking, and Xander really controlled that match from the get-go, and Adam Scott's putter really let him down. And I think he's going to look back on this one. It's going to be a bad taste in his mouth for a while because, the guys who – one of the things that I was talking with Paul Azinger before this thing started, he said the Europeans hate to lose. The internationals, they don't like to lose, but they don't hate to lose. And I think that showed up a little bit today, and that these guys, maybe it was just too much pressure of being at home and just how much they wanted to do it for Ernie, and maybe it was just added too much pressure for those guys. But to get only two wins in the singles, you're not gonna, they were lucky that they were as close as they were, but Ernie, I thought, did everything he could this week to put his team in the right position. He said our goal was to get to 10 points going into the singles, and they did that. Their big guns let them down on Sunday.
Yeah. So the F-bomb of the week goes to Patrick Cantlay, who uncorked a beauty. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but certainly on the broadcast, they immediately apologized after he sank a birdie putt that obviously meant a lot to him. Usually a pretty quiet guy on the golf course, tremendous game. But what did you sort of think from him this week? To be honest with you, I look at him as sort of a guy who is just continuously overlooked. He doesn't have the flamboyance. He doesn't have the sort of big personality that Justin Thomas walks in the room and you know he's there. And Jordan Spieth has had that. I mean, he may not have it sort of right now. Ricky Fowler is one of the most electric personalities. And from a marketing standpoint, everybody sort of jumped on him right from the get-go. So we all sort of know about Ricky Fowler. But Patrick Cantlay just sort of goes about his business. And he seemed like a tough guy. I love when he comes out all in black, and obviously he's wearing the team uniform at this event, but like he's like the Johnny Cash of golf. He comes out there as the man in black, and he just lays it down. And I love the way he plays. I love the fact that nobody ever really talks about him as being their pick at big tournaments and big championships. But on a pressure-filled stage and a time when obviously he wanted to play, he said that he was really excited to play team golf for the first time. I think it was the 2011 Walker Cup matches, he said, was the last time he had played on a team and represented his country. It clearly means a lot for him. In some ways, he's just overlooked. He is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm on his bandwagon with you. I think he's going to be a really big star, even bigger than he already is. I think there's majors in his future because he's got such a complete game, drives it so straight and long. And you're a big stats guy. I mean, he's in the top 20 in like
everything,
or the top in like 25, 30 different categories. Yeah. He's just so consistent. And when you have that many opportunities, I think as once he starts getting a little more comfortable being in those positions, I think he's going to be a 2-3 win type guy. And, with potential to get to world number one, I really think so. I think he's just starting to figure it out. And, he went through some tough times.
Yes, he did.
With the back injury and his friend, witnessing his friend get
literally
hit by a car and
dying
die.
In his arms.
When you go through stuff like that, some of these little things in the golf world, they're not as you have more of an appreciation of life and everything. And I think he's a bit of an old soul. I understand he spent a lot of, was a kind of a country club kid who grew up playing with the 60, 70 year old guys would bring, let him in their games. And so he loves to play gin. And I think he got along pretty well in the team room. And I think this was a good year for him to get the exposure of being part of one of these winning teams. And because he's going to, I think he'll be a slam dunk Ryder Cup guy for next year and then probably many years to come.
So let's talk about that for just a second. We've sort of danced around this, but obviously we've got Ryder Cup coming up in 2020. And if you sort of look up and down the lineup of the players that we would assume are probably going to be there, you got Patrick Cantlay, who's 27. Justin Thomas, who's 26, Shoffley's 26, Koepka, who didn't play this event, is 29, Ricky Fowler just turned 31. Then you sort of blend in Tiger Woods, who there's no reason to think the way that he's been playing, you know, he's not going to be a part of that team. Dustin Johnson, that's seven really strong players. There's no reason to think, or can you think of a reason why the American team shouldn't be really, really strong at the next Ryder Cup in 2020?
I think they're in a good position for many years to come. And you know, I mentioned a couple of those young guys, Colin Morikawa, I think is going to continue to. Yeah. So there's and I love Kisner. I love Kisner in this type of in match play and a team event. You mentioned you brought him up earlier. You know, he didn't really have a good fall to you know, get on Tiger's radar. But I think he would have been, you know, there's some guys that just. They just know how to
he's going to grind it out. You'd hate to play Kisner in a match thing. So I agree. Yeah. I think that there's an embarrassment of riches. We didn't even talk about Bryson DeChambeau and Tony Finau. DeChambeau had a really up and down week. I think that at times he struggled, and then he obviously plays better in singles. Finau, I think, is not attributed. People just don't appreciate how much guts this guy's had to be able to make the comeback that he did and steal a half point. Was absolutely brilliant. So I think that the U.S. Ryder Cup team going into the fall is looking good, assuming people are playing to the level that we assume that they're going to play to, that we don't have big injuries. If Jordan Spieth can turn it around, and I think he does turn it around. I know there's a lot of people who are really down on him, but I think he's too smart and too young and too good to not figure it out at some point. Which team do you think right now is the strongest? I mean, it's sort of odd that we don't have the equivalent where the European star players who will play Ryder Cup, they're not going to face this international team. Between the European team that we sort of think about and the Americans and the internationals making huge strides this year with President's Cup, I think they really grew by leaps and bounds. Which team, in your opinion, is the strongest?
Well, I think on paper it's the U.S. team, but the Europeans, they have the cup everybody really wants right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think Whistling Straits is a good venue for the Europeans. Harrington's a smart guy, will probably work even harder than Ernie Els has in prepping for 2020. And, you know, I think this is I'm trying to think of the right word to use here. Maybe you can help me out. But I think the whole system for the U.S., everything that happened with the you know, the revamping their whole system is really going to, this is the year. Like, this is the year where we see, are we going down the right track? Because if the U.S. loses at home, then what have we really, you know, then we're back to square one, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, they won that first one, but then not so good on the road last time. So this is the one, I think this one is a big test, because if you lose at home, then what, I think is the real question for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. And I thought you know, that first victory seemed like validation, but everything kind of went,
everything went south. They made a lot of bad. Yeah. Paris absolutely was.
There were many mistakes made in terms of selections and how they prepared for that that cup.
So let's finish this up with a discussion of what I think was the biggest star of the show, and that was Royal Melbourne itself. You've had a chance to walk around that golf course a lot. Tell me your impressions of Royal Melbourne and the hype that was going on. The broadcast was over the top, but it seemed justified. That looks like an absolute gem of a golf course, and it's a pity we're probably not going to see it for a little while. Tell me about your impressions of Royal Melbourne.
Yeah, it's just, it's the way golf should be. It's, you know, it's so strategic. It's all about where you're positioning your golf ball, and you got to, you know, run the ball up and the ball was bouncing and it's just, that's good golf. And we need more of that and to challenge these guys and just watch them, the thinking and processing of how to play certain shots. And the variety of options that you have out there wasn't long. There wasn't crazy rough. You know, it was just, you know, Mackenzie was a genius. It was a, you know, it's a place that's, it felt like a British Open, but the greens are like Augusta National, and you know, I didn't hear anybody say anything negative about the golf course, but and really, how could you? There's so many great ones in this area of the Australian Sand Belt. Had a chance to play a couple of them, and looking forward to playing a few more in the days
say,
to come.
You're going to be going night-night here very soon, because where's the tee time tomorrow? Or later today?
Kingston Heath.
Another
Kingston Heath with, I'm going to name drop here, playing a little golf with Ian Baker Finch tomorrow morning.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah.
So yeah. I wonder what his mood will be tomorrow. I mean, he doesn't directly have anything with his team, but I think that Monday Australia mourns, and in many places that they're going to be mourning, but we're not. Fantastic job this week up on golfweek.com. You know, the having that boots on the ground, as they say, is there's no substitute for it, Shoop. So get yourself some rest, peg it up with IVF tomorrow, and thanks a lot for coming on the Four Press.
All right, buddy. Anytime.